They are big time water wasters. And this month, they're being publicly named and shamed. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you had a good weekend. If you watched some football, gosh, wasn't that just the toughest? We'll talk about that in a little bit. Well, we are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or through our app. Just ahead, we've got the advanced look at the biggest water hogs on the First Coast. You can get on the line now with your thoughts about that at 549-2937. Then later, as women take to the streets over the weekend, spotlighting some of the fiercest female leaders right here in Northeast Florida. Plus, Culpepper on the Jaguars' tough loss in the AFC Championship game against New England. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, this year marks the return of a very closely watched annual list that for years had come out in Folio Weekly. It took a hiatus, but it's back. Water hogs. A look at the biggest water wasters in town. Now, homeowners, some of these folks on the list are using millions of gallons of water a year on their properties, amounts so high they're frankly shocking in some cases. This is all publicly available data, by the way. Now, the idea behind publicly naming and shaming the water hogs is to draw attention to this waste of water in general and raise more awareness about the need to educate the public so that we can all get more into the habit of conserving this precious natural resource. Claire Goforth is editor of Folio Weekly, and she's here now with more about this week's forthcoming edition of Water Hogs. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts and comments about the Water Hogs issue of Folio Weekly coming out Wednesday? What are your thoughts and concerns about water conservation, especially here in Florida? 549-2937 is the number to join the show. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, and you can also weigh in on our Facebook page. All right, so for years, this was an annual mainstay with Folio. It sort of took a hiatus. You've brought it back. Why?
Well, I always really enjoyed the water hogs issue because I think that we're all kind of voyeuristic. We like to see what other people are doing. Mm-hmm. And I know that our water resources are finite. So when I became editor a couple of years ago, we kind of talked about it, whether or not we were going to do it. It's always been one of our most popular and closely watched issues. It's also an issue that we get a lot of pushback from the people whom we name. And this year is no exception to that, of course. But, you know, a bottom line was it's important for us to be aware of the use. The Floridan aquifer is one of the most productive in the world, but it is still a finite resource. So we decided that we were going to just go ahead, bring it back. Let's shine the spotlight on water consumption. And I know a lot of people, they do feel shamed, and we have a very good time with it. We try to put their consumption into different perspectives and crunch the numbers so that people can kind of get a sense of it. I mean, there's one person who used enough water that would be enough to flush a water sense toilet every hour for 159 years. Okay. But, you know, I think that the more people are aware of the water consumption, then we can all make changes in our lives to kind of pull it back.
There are little things all of us can do to conserve water at our homes, at our businesses. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, let's talk about these. You have the top 12, is that right?
Top 12, yes.
Water hogs in this area.
In this area, top 12 JEA customers. Now, of these top 12, the number one on the list is actually a real estate company. And they say that they're a developer, that they're actually, the consumption in their view is not actually, is not per one individual home, because that sprinkler system, according to them, is hooked up to numerous homes in this development and will be parsed off. But there are 10 others on this list, because they're on the list twice, whom are individual homeowners. At least two of them do seem like they had leaks, and that is something that does happen. But cumulatively, these 12 customers use 19 million gallons of water in a one-year period from November 1st, 2016 through October 31st, 2017. Mm-hmm. That's 2.5 billion pounds of water.
That's a lot of water.
That's a lot of water.
And as you said, the top offender, if you want to call it that, is AV Homes on Maybell Drive. It's simply a three-bedroom home where they have a company, mm-hmm. but they're hooked up to the sprinkler system for a lot of other homes. So that gives them at least a little bit of a pass, okay? You've also said some of these other water hogs perhaps have leaks, so they've been alerted to that. But then there are some other names on the list who just are sprinkling the heck, I guess, out of their property and using a lot of water.
Oh, most likely. And although because we took a 5-year hiatus, mm-hmm. we're not naming repeat offenders, there are repeat offenders on the list, I will tell you that. And the thing that's really fascinating about this is how we all imagine the people that are consuming disproportionate amount of our resources are going to be country clubs, big properties, palatial estates, and those are on the list. But so are homes that are 1,800 square feet on a sixth of an acre. That's our number two water hog that used over 2 million gallons.
How's he using it?
I mean, as far as we can tell, it's most likely landscaping because the average American uses between 28,000 and 35,000 gallons of water a year. Now, we know statistically speaking that of our water resources, half of them go on our lawns and half of them go to personal consumption. But on water hogs, if you have a 2-bedroom house, even if 4 people lived there, I mean, that's 120,000 gallons unless you just really like to flush that toilet. So odds are most of this is being dumped on the lawn.
If you're just tuning in, it's an advanced look at this week's publication of Water Hogs, the biggest water guzzlers on the First Coast. It's back after a 5-year hiatus. What are your questions? What are your comments? Do you think it's fair to publish this list and name and shame these water hogs? That's been a controversy in the past. Give us a call at 549-2937. Okay, so Claire Goforth, as I said, you sort of provide nuance to some of these water hogs. But then you said some of them are palatial estates. Look, here's one, number 4 on the list. James Meyer, who lives on Queens Harbor Boulevard at the Queens Harbor Yacht and Country Club in a $2 million home. He's got a big property, almost 2 acres. He's used 1.7 million gallons of water over the last year. And as you write, that's enough water for 4 average Americans to take a shower every day for 69 years. Okay, so if you're him and he says, look, it's my property, I can use this water however I want, what's your response to that?
I mean, think globally, act locally really is the response because, yes, you are completely entitled to use water as you wish. But if you want to be a responsible human and a steward of our environment and our planet, maybe you want to make some changes in how you're consuming that water. These people aren't public enemy number one. I think most of them are guilty of what many of us are. We're just kind of numb to it. We don't pay attention. Most of what's happening is the sprinkler systems that are cutting on even when we have a lot of rainfall, which is why this year we got monthly data on consumption, in part because then we can really see if it's a leak, and also in part so we could compare the average rainfall for that month. When you're using hundreds of thousands of gallons in a month, when we had hundreds of thousands of gallons per acre falling on the grass from the sky, let's just say that maybe you should have invested $20 to $100 or more on these rain sensor fixtures that can mm-hmm. take your sprinkler system and just automatically cut it off when there's enough water.
And we tend to think of fresh water as like the air, just something that will always be there, plentiful, ever renewable resource. But the reality is that fresh water is actually a finite resource. It is becoming more scarce. People are using up the planet's fresh water faster than we can replenish it. A warming climate is drying up our lakes and rivers. We're going to continue to see the effects of a warming climate affecting our fresh water supply in the coming decades. This is a slow-moving issue, and it's not one that's an immediate crisis, but it is an issue. And so it's something that I think the return of your annual list is trying to help raise awareness about.
Absolutely. We know that sometime in this next century, we're going to be facing water shortages in many areas of the planet, including ours. There was a time when they were predicting, I want to say it was up to about a 90 million gallon a day shortage in our area, and they've since revised that. But there's a reason why there are some very big time investors who are now investing their funds in water resources, because eventually we're going to reach a point where we don't have enough. But the thing is, I say that, I predict that we're going to do this, but we don't have to. We can stop using at this rate. It's very easy to change these sprinkler systems, plant different landscaping. I mean, the home builders, the developers, they need to take responsibility. They need to take leadership in this area. And, you know, people like St. Augustine grass, but let's be more realistic about the kind of landscaping that we're putting in. I mean, AV Homes, one of those developments they advertise is old Florida style. Now, I spend a lot of time in nature preserves because I really enjoy them. And I know that those plants are not being watered via sprinkler system. They are surviving. Old Florida does not mean grass that is this impossible shade of green. There are drought-sensitive, drought-tolerant plants that we can use. There's so many workarounds that if we all take a small amount of responsibility in our daily lives, we can we can delay the shortage of our water substantially.
There are all little things everyone can do. And a moment ago, you mentioned savvy investors are already putting their money in funds around this issue of water. I think of the movie The Big Short.
Exactly.
That came out a year or two ago about the very few people that foresaw the impending financial crisis and moved their money around to take advantage of it. One of the people that was profiled in that movie is putting all of his money in seeds. And that has to do with his connecting the dots to realize that in the future, water is going to be a very precious resource that the world will be fighting over. It's sort of chilling. And it's something, frankly, that concerns me. So I'm glad we're having this conversation right now.
You know, I mean, your children, your grandchildren, they may be facing these extremely high water bills. And when water becomes this commodity that's expensive, what are we going to do? We have no choice. Human beings need a certain amount of water to survive. And right now, we are dumping that precious resource on grass day in and day out. And another thing that really is alarming about this list is how many of these homes are waterfront properties. The reason that this is particularly concerning is because, by and large, these very large estates that have beautiful lawns, they use a disproportionate amount of fertilizer, and then they dump a ton of water on their grass. Now, that runoff goes directly into our river and increases the nitrogen and various other pollutants that cause algal blooms and really affect the long-term health of our river.
All right. If you're just tuning in, lots of calls as we speak with Folio Weekly editor Claire Goforth. This week, they're back with their annual list of the area's biggest water hogs. What are your thoughts about the issue and the need, the growing need, as we'll see this century, to conserve fresh water, a finite resource, one we all need to survive? 549-2937. Craig is on the south side. Hi, Craig. Good morning. Craig, are you there? All right, give us a call. Well, I'm sorry, Craig, I accidentally cut you off. Give us a call back, Craig. Leslie is in Ortega right now. Hello, Leslie. Good morning to you.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thanks. Yep, go ahead.
Well, yes, I live in Ortega, and I have an acre. And I see people watering when, as far as I know, the law is this time of year you're only allowed to water once a week, and it's either on an odd or even based on your address, and you are not allowed to water between 10 and 4. So who do I call? Is it 630 City? We need enforcement is one point I have. And then I also would recommend people use native plants, ground cover, that doesn't require the amount of water that St. Augustine grass does.
Yeah.
I find that St. Augustine grass is probably the most difficult plant to grow in Northeast Florida, and I'm a gardener. Yes. That's one thing. And I was going to also point out that I read that Cape Town in South Africa is going to be the first large city in the world to run out of water, and that's projected to happen this April.
Is that right? I'll have to look. I'll have to look at that. Thank you for that, Leslie. And you know, here's a tweet from Daniel, pretty much echoing what Leslie just said. Claire, Daniel tweets the show: Florida needs to fall out of love with St. Augustine grass. It's not pretty, too rough to enjoy playtime on, and it uses too much water. It's time to look west for xeriscaping inspiration. You know, when you go out to Western cities, they have really perfected the art of using minimal water for landscaping, using less grass, because they just don't have the water to support it.
Right. I mean, the abundance of our water resource is something of a luxury to us, and we don't appreciate it because it's just, it's always there and you can plant whatever you want. I think the caller and the gentleman on Twitter, they both raise excellent points about St. Augustine grass and native species. My husband and I do not irrigate our lawn. We have an acre and about a third of it is not developed. It's what you'd call a Florida lawn. And I have to tell you, the native species, when they're in bloom, it's absolutely beautiful. When there's rain, it's green. And when there's not rain, yes, it does not look like that palatial estate with the green grass. But I feel like we're being the example that we want to see in others. If I'm going to get on this program and tell everyone to stop watering their lawns, I have to live
that. You have to practice what you preach.
I certainly do.
Okay. Frank on the South Side. Hello, Frank. Go ahead.
Thank you. I know these are individuals that you're looking at, but I suggest the next time you do this, you include some corporate people, because St. John's Paper Company, or St. Joe Paper Company, is a tremendous user.
Okay, thanks for that, Frank. What about, you're focusing on homeowners on this list. Is that unfair? Since, yeah, they're using a lot, but big business is using more.
Oh, they certainly are using a lot, and we have talked about it. The problem becomes, like, some of these industrial purposes require a certain amount of water, and maybe in the future we will point out what they're doing, but then at the same time we'd have to really understand what's required, because I mean, some of these manufacturers, they need the water to perform whatever the function is. But he makes a great point. Maybe there are some ways that we can minimize use on those levels as well.
Right. 549-2937 as we talk about water hogs. Folio Weekly will be out with its annual list this week. David is on the South Side as well. Hey, David, thanks for holding. Good morning.
You're touching on one of the points I was calling about business, but also I would say in your study, take the consumption divided by the acreage or land size for all the users, and you might find some small users use a lot relative to their lot size, one. The second thing is businesses. I would say look at your businesses, how much water they use and how much affluence and what's in the affluence, because all that water ends up in the river. Now, we catch all the water from further down south coming north, and there are a lot of hormones and other chemicals in there. So in Europe years ago, I read that the industries were required to have the effluents upstream from their intake, which was downstream, which made them really clean up the water they were dumping into the rivers. I think that all of this points to the problems of how do we look at what is going into the sewer system also, and also the wells. We, you know, I've never heard how often a well should be checked for safety. One time we had a drought, and there was a person who said, you know, I wish it would rain because my well has gone dry, and I would like it to fill up the aquifer so we can get our well back.
Yeah,
and
got
they
you,
were
David.
Drinking it.
Okay,
now, they were really drinking runoff.
Thanks, David. Thanks, David. Okay, Claire.
Yeah, I mean, pollution is certainly a concern. And these wells, I mean, these, what we are able to get from JEA is data on their customers. There are a lot of customers who have wells, and we don't even know how much they're using.
A woman called a few moments ago about Cape Town, South Africa. Thanks for that call. I've just looked that up, and apparently Cape Town, South Africa's second largest city, facing its worst drought in a century, is expected to see its water supply run out on April 21st. They're calling it day zero. It's a city of 4 million, and beginning in April, people will have to line up in the streets at just 200 water stations. Police will enforce a limit of 6.6 gallons per person. If the city runs out of water, it will be the first major city in a developed country to suffer this fate. They have no idea how the elderly, how the disabled are going to cope, how they're going to handle sewage, how they're going to handle infrastructure. So this certainly seems to be a canary in the coal mine situation when you look at this issue of water as a finite resource. Now, granted, they have a completely different climate, topography than we do. And speaking of that, here's a tweet for you, Claire. Here is a tweet from a listener. Come on now, Grant tweets the show. Water hogs. I agree climate change is important, but that doesn't mean we're going to lose our fresh water. It sounds like environmental hyperbole and scare tactics. What about that?
Well, I mean, we have data that indicates that in a few decades, we are going to be facing a water shortage. And the time to do something about that is now, not in 2050, when we're running out of water. Does he want to be standing in line to get water? I mean, and that is going to become a health crisis, the likes of which we have not seen in the modern era.
Here's another tweet. I rode the bus 2 hours a day to testify at the St. John's River Water Management District with a water scientist. Algorithms show the aquifer will eventually run dry. Conservation is key. Lots of tweets and calls coming in about this. Let's go to Marley in St. John's. Marley, is that your name? Good morning.
Hey, Minister, good morning. I listen to your show every day, and I really get a lot of knowledge listening to your show. Come from India. I mean, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So I come from India, and I've been here like last 20 years. I have seen water scarcity, and like people stand in lines just to get like a bucket of water. And here I see like people just waste water with like they don't have any care or any respect for water. I recently moved to a neighborhood in St. John's. A year ago, and I see like all the common area lawns, like they water every day. Doesn't matter if it's winter or summer. And I don't know if anyone is even keeping tab on these builders where they just waste so much water.
Yes, thanks for that, Marley. We just take it so for granted in this country. We just have not had the experience for the most part of desperately needing it. And okay, here are a few more tweets. Remind listeners that JEA has alerts you can set up for consumption. I set mine up after I had a 10-day leak. Grant tweets the show, we installed perennial peanut ground cover 7 years ago, and it's been 7 years since we watered our attractive and edible lawn. Jim on Twitter writes, we live in a two-story home with five people. We haven't watered our lawn since the drought in 98. We use 4 to 5K gallons a month. We produce apples, nectarines, avocados, and Japanese plums. Water hogs are just gluttons, he writes. All right, Jenny on the South Side. Go ahead, Jenny.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I was just curious. People that have wells seem to think they don't have to follow the same watering guidelines as the rest of us that are on city water. Is that true or false?
I believe that would be false. And that raises an interesting point about city enforcement. By and large, there's no enforcement. It's on the honor system. And, I mean, we have finite resources on the city level. People, however, take this lack of enforcement to just give them licensure to water as much as they want. I mean, no matter what time of day, middle of July, high noon, you drive around town, you're going to see sprinkler systems on.
And Ricardo emails the show about this. He says, has JEA thought about changing the rate structure to make this economically prohibited?
Well, I don't know if they've thought about it, but I know that every time they change any rate structure,
people don't like it very much.
It means people are spending, you know, maybe $10,000 a year, some of these water hogs, on water, which is relatively low considering the consumption. Water is extremely cheap.
Guy, along 210. Hi, Guy.
Good morning. I've moved here recently from Utah, where our history goes back to having water wars for the misappropriation. In Utah, you must have stock certificates before you're even able to sink a well and draw water for a single-family residence. It's an issue here that I'm shocked by on 210, that so many of the gated communities and non-gated, of which I live in a non-gated golf course community, you get nasty letters if your lawn is brown and you're not putting enough water on it from the HOA association.
Right.
I think the HOA associations have to be brought to task that it isn't an offense if your lawn isn't thoroughly green and you haven't pressure washed your driveway in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah, thanks for that, Guy.
It's an ongoing issue. Have a good day. Love your show.
Thank you, Guy. Yes, and of course, he's right. That is a common situation if you have an HOA. But I think as your annual issue now back on newsstands this Wednesday, people are asking when it will be out. As this shows, until water becomes extremely expensive and scarce, Claire, history shows that humans will not change their behavior. We probably won't see much of a change in this wasting of water until we have to change. You're trying to nudge the awareness along, I think.
Definitely. And I kind of disagree with that. I mean, people are recycling more and more these days. People are making an effort. And a lot of these people who are calling in, like the people that planted peanuts, and people are taking their own lives and making these changes because most of us do want to do right by our fellow man and by future generations.
It's the annual Water Hogs List out this Wednesday on newsstands, in folio, and online. Editor Claire Goforth, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you so much for having me.
Much more still ahead on this show later. Culpepper on a heartbreaker for the Jaguars as they came up just a little short against the Patriots. In the AFC Championship game. But up next, growing fierce women's leadership here on the First Coast. We'll tell you about that right after this.
Wouldn't it be nice to know what's in the local daily newspaper, even if you have blindness or diminishing eyesight? WJCT's radio reading service can help. You'll hear what's in the Florida Times Union every day, articles, op-eds, obituaries, even the comics. Sign up at wjct.org/radio reading. Our thanks to Florida Eye Specialists, Delta Gamma of UNF, and the Radio Reading Service volunteer readers for giving voice to the printed word.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to present the 5th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, February 10th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. Tickets purchased for the 2016 and 2017 events will be honored. Share ideas with colleagues, learn new ways to engage students, and empower yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets today at wjct.org/teach. Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. The best in classic and modern blues as part of WJCT's After Hours. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
I don't want no woman telling me what to do. Presenting Next Avenue, created specifically for living life after 50. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue and bookmark the place where grown-ups keep growing.
Welcome back. Female leadership and connection is the primary mission of She Is Fierce, a global women's organization based in St. Augustine, but with membership in countries around the world. Full disclosure, I do lead live events here in Jacksonville, and they're a lot of fun. Now, you can learn more about She Is Fierce later this week in St. Augustine. Here in studio, we welcome founder Kelly Youngs. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you so much for having me this morning. I'm so excited to be here and so excited to have you as a part of our organization.
Thank you so much. And on the line, also with us, Creative Director Nadia Ramatar. Hey, Nadia.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
Really well, thanks. Okay, so Kelly, let's begin with you. And by the way, this isn't connected to She Is Fierce necessarily, but we did see over the weekend millions of women all over the world out marching, registering women to run for office, pushing for more women to go for leadership positions. Women are rising and really finding their voice in a number of ways. And so with She Is Fierce, what you're seeking is to grow more female leadership and connect women to each other. How did you come up with the concept?
Yeah, so I mean, I would say that our organization is not political, but our mission is all about sharing women's stories, right? So we love to see women of any party trying to become a leader in their community. We love to see women, you know, with any background or any ambition leading the charge. And that's really where we are as an organization. So we are both a storytelling organization and also a global membership community that provides women with a toolkit of resources, you know, for their personal and professional development to grow and to kind of just reach those big dreams.
That's right. And Nadia Ramatar, there's been incredible growth over the last year. For example, just in November, across the street at Everbank Field, we had a sold out talk from Jaguars chief legal officer, Megha Parekh. That was a lot of fun. And later this week, you've got something cooking down in St. Johns County. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so on January, Nadia, on January 24th, we have our event at Bozard Ford Lincoln, which is down in St. Augustine, and it's going to be a panel and a party. It is kind of everything you need to kick off the year. So we're going to have a panel of fierce female leaders in St. Augustine, and also, you know, women who are from all different backgrounds who are making things happen down there. And we're going to have a party full of vodka bar, ice cream bar, beauty bar, branding bar, and a business bar. So everything you need to kick off the year.
Nadia, this is something that whether you're more established in your career or you're a really young woman just getting going in the workplace, it's a way to find a mentor, an accountability partner, find connections that can really pay dividends, I think, down the line.
For sure, for sure. I think that's one of the really wonderful things about She Is Fierce is that it's an arena in which women can actually give and get as a mentor. In other words, there's women within She Is Fierce who are helping me, who are showing me the way, and then there's women who are also on the rise, and I'm able to mentor them, coach them, work with them. Including, Melissa, the fact that maybe I'm not an expert in a certain field, but I'm an expert somewhere else. And so someone is able to also be a professional development resource for me or be an expert for me or just be an encourager. And I think that's one of the things we're seeing at a national level is right now a lot of women are in need of encouragement in a positive way, and they really need to be uplifted.
So you'll be providing some of that Wednesday night. How can people get their tickets?
Yes, they can get their tickets right on Eventbrite. And it's really all about sharing women's stories. So you know this, Melissa. You've been to so many of our talks. And what we do is we just ask women to get on stage, women who are highly accomplished, women like you, women like Megha, women like Marsha Oliver, who have been our Jacksonville speakers. And we ask them to share the tough things that they've been through and how they got to where they are.
All right. Thanks so much. She Is Fierce founder and CEO Kelly Youngs, creative director Nadia Ramatar. Their Cocktails and Connections event is this Wednesday, 5:30 p.m. at Bozard Ford Lincoln. Get your tickets now on Eventbrite. Ladies, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Still to come, Culpepper on the Jaguars' heartbreaking loss to the Patriots. But up next, the world's most unusual and apparently effective shark deterrent. If you're a surfer, a swimmer, you'll want to hear about shark eyes. That's after this.
We've updated the WJCT app to make it even better. Stay up to date with local and national NPR news from your phone or tablet. Listen live to First Coast Connect or any of your favorite radio programs. Stay connected and informed. Download the WJCT app today. Available at the Apple App Store and Google Play.
Did you know even U.S. senators listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me? Here's Montana Senator John Tester.
How I got turned on to this program, as a matter of fact, was riding the tractor. We don't get a really good NPR signal where I'm at, but on the tractor I get a decent one, and if I'm heading a certain direction, I can pick you up.
You know that? Really? Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. The thing you can listen to when you can't pick up any other station. Saturday and Sunday mornings on 89.9 WJCT.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
There you are.
One day the phone rang.
Hello.
Hello.
And it was him.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, there we go.
What's shaking?
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Hey.
Let me introduce you to someone.
Okay.
He was just the most charming, welcoming, open, beguiling person you could possibly imagine. And he was nuts, which was a lot of fun.
Say hello to Awesome every week on Radiolab.
Sunday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, it's billed as the world's most affordable and effective shark deterrent. Yeah, Shark Eyes is making its U.S. debut this week at the U.S. Surf Expo in Orlando. Now, all you surfers, all you water users out there, listen up. Shark Eyes is for anybody out there in the ocean who wants to minimize their risk of a shark attack. It's a simple $20 decal. And it works to fool the shark into thinking it's been spotted, removing the element of surprise and deterring an attack. This is an amazing concept. Shark Eyes founder and director Shannon Worrell is here all the way from Australia with more about his amazing invention. Good morning.
Hey, how you going, Melissa?
So good to see you. And so you're a guy who spends a lot of time in the ocean. You really hit upon a genius idea because Australia, of course, is known for shark-infested waters. You're a shell diver, you're a spear fisherman. And didn't you lose a friend to a shark attack too?
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time in the water over in Australia there, living, eating, and breathing the ocean. So unfortunately, when you do spend that much time in the water, you do have a lot of interactions, and with that comes bouncing into the occasional shark.
Right. So you came up with Shark Eyes. It's a decal you could put on the bottom of your surfboard or another surface, and it's just a huge pair of eyes.
Yeah, as simple and as easy as that sounds, some of the best ideas, I guess, are like that.
Right.
Know? And we've just seen it firsthand, like how effective line-of-sight trickery is with sharks and how much they actually change their behavior after it is spotted.
So. Yeah, so sharks are ambush predators. They want the element of surprise to attack. But if they see these huge eyes, you've found that they incorrectly believe they've been spotted. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. And in their predation, at the very, very start of their risk assessment, if everything is not perfectly lined up and going how they want it to, at the risk of self-harm or simply the thing that it's chasing can run away, they just simply move on to another target that's easier where everything is lined up perfectly. So something so simple can actually save some lives. It's
crazy.
That's
amazing. And have you seen it work? Have you seen it actually
definitely.
Make a shark go the other way?
Yeah, we've been using this at work, and it's not a new concept that we've come up with here. Nature has actually adapted to this, And all of Australia's watermen, I guess you would say, and professionals have known about this kind of deterrent for a long, long time.
In fact, you say in the natural world, large eyes deter predators. How does that work in nature?
Yeah, it's called mimicry. You would have seen many, I know the David Attenborough kind of shows are probably the ones that everyone can relate to. You see the moths with big eyes on their wings, or there's caterpillars that have big eyes on their behinds, and it's basically aimed to trick the predator into thinking it's been spotted and can actually run away or fight back.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's crazy simple, but yet studies have been done on all of those animals to show how effective it actually is.
Now, how do you use shark eyes in your daily time in the water?
Well, we've got wetsuits that actually apply the shark eyes on the back. So when you've got your head down, quite often when you're abalone diving, you have your head down in rocks and you're chipping away, so you can't actually see what's behind you. So we have them to go on the back of wetsuits, and then when we're surfing, I do a bit of big wave surfing, and we use them on the underside of all our watercrafts.
And they're huge. I mean, these are huge eyes.
Yeah, the bigger the better, because the bigger the eye indicates the bigger the animal that the shark will be looking at. So however big your watercraft is, just go big.
You've also, haven't they also even studied whether sharks can discern color? These are blue eyes, right?
Yeah.
Is that even a factor in this?
Yeah, it is a bit of a factor. Like in the top 10 metres of the water column, you have your reds and your yellows, and they start distinguishing down or fading out. So what they do know that sharks can see is contrast and depth of field. So they're a little bit unsure if they are colourblind or what the case is, but that contrast and depth of field can be seen there. And we worked with marine scientists, for a couple of months trying to create that depth of field and contrast that can be seen. And it's kind of like the Mona Lisa look, you know, as you walk around the room.
The eyes follow you.
Yeah, the eyes are looking at you. So we've tried to create that.
Wow. And so it's exciting to talk to you because you made a very brief stop in Jacksonville on your way down to Orlando for the U.S. Surf Expo. This is the U.S. debut of Shark Eyes. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, super exciting, because the whole motivation of this for me all started with a bit of personal heart, I guess, in this to keep people safer. So we've managed to do that in Australia, and it's taken off really well and become a common, you know, shark deterrent that is in use. So hopefully we can bring it here to America and keep some of you guys a bit safer.
Sure. Only $20, so very affordable.
It's so simple, and that's probably the best bit about it, is that everyone can actually afford to use this and put on their first line of defence against shark attack.
Now, I think of surfers obviously wanting this. Who else could benefit from shark eyes?
Absolutely everyone that uses the ocean, to be honest. We've got a range of products that are coming out. So from ocean kayakers to SUPs to boogie boarders, just they're all the actual watercraft. Mm-hmm. But then we've got RAS vests, we've got dive flippers and fins and the rest of it, and another range of products that are still all to come.
Wow.
And you can see all this on the website sharkeyesusa.com.
SharkEyesUSA.com. Will this be your first trip down to the convention center in Orlando, by the way?
Yeah, definitely will. I've been west side.
Godspeed. We've been having this little debate in Jacksonville over a bigger convention center. For anyone that's ever been to the one in Orlando, if you make it out alive, you've done all right. But but the good news is lots of people are going to see your amazing product. So I hope you sell a ton of Shark Eyes decals. I'm sure you will. It's a pleasure to talk to you. And this is it's like you said, the most brilliant ideas are the simplest ones. So kudos to you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Lee. I'm glad we can be out here handing it over to the Americans.
That's right. It's Shark Eyes, sharkeyesusa.com, a simple $20 decal that will deter a shark in the ocean. Check it out. The inventor is Shannon Worrell. If you're headed to the U.S. Surf Expo this week in Orlando, he'll be displaying it there too. So enjoy and be safe out there in the water. In a moment, Cole Pepper on an incredible season and a heartbreaking loss last night for the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's after this here on First Coast Connect. Keep listening.
Ever looked at a politician and thought, well, I could do a better job than that? Maybe it's time to prove it. More Americans are deciding that this year is their year.
If you're disappointed by your elected officials, grab a clipboard, get some signatures, and run for office yourself.
A nonpartisan primer on how to run and win. Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, is American democracy in trouble? Professor Stephen Levitsky and Daniel Ziblatt say it's threatened by partisan politics and a president who denigrates the media and impugns the integrity of elections.
It's hard to think of two institutions that are more fundamental to democracy than our elections and our free press.
Their book is How Democracies Die. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Florida historians and their students are creating innovative digital resources. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with some of the state's leading digital historians about the future of history. We'll discuss a letter from 1884 and the Tequesta Indians of Southeast Florida. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT offers a 24-hour classical music service dedicated to live classical music programming 24 hours a day. To find out more, visit us at wjct.org/hd.
Do you alphabetize your spice rack? Do you solve crossword puzzles in pen? Then you will love NPR's Ask Me Another, an entire hour of puzzles, word games, and trivia.
Sundays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, the Jaguars come up just short of the Super Bowl as they lose in a heartbreaker at the AFC Championship game to the Patriots.
He's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too? I'm a pepper.
Did you watch last night? Cole Pepper breaks down all of the highlights and lowlights. And Cole, it's just so sad for this team. They could have really had their first Super Bowl appearance, but still, what a great season for this franchise.
All right, let's talk about the game, and then we'll talk about the season, and then we'll talk about the future here. The game, in just a few words here, the Jaguars have never been as close to the Super Bowl as they were yesterday. Led by 10 in the fourth quarter. They had never led in the fourth quarter in an AFC Championship game.
Right.
The key play to me was a 3rd and 18 that the Patriots converted in the fourth quarter in route to the first of two Tom Brady to Danny Amendola touchdown passes. There was the longest 3rd down conversion that the Jaguars allowed this year. So think about that. And when you go up against the best quarterback of all time, those things can happen. A lot of people today are complaining about the officiating. A couple of things I'll say on that.
I saw that on Twitter last night. Yeah. There's just so much anger. They really felt like the refs had it in the tank for the Patriots. That there's even a picture of this ref smiling and hugging the Patriots.
Well, yeah, so the picture you're talking about was a moment after a touchdown in the first half where the official is surrounded by a bunch of Patriots who are coming to celebrate. I think he's going to get the ball, and he's got a smile on his face.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of like one of those captured in the moment. If you go back and look at the video, he's not celebrating with him. He's going to get the ball, and these guys are all around him. He was the guy who was right on the spot. It's a bad look in the moment. I think the conspiracy theorists are looking for something to blame other than the action on the field for that. There were some bad calls. There's no doubt about it. I don't think it's a conspiracy. However, when there are 6 penalties for almost 100 yards called on the Jaguars and only 1 penalty called on the Patriots, it does make you scratch
Boomer
your head.
Boomer Esiason even commented on it.
Yeah, and so here's what...
There's this widespread perception that they...
Did the Patriots get the calls, especially at home? Well, sure, and that happens with every great team in every sport. They seemingly get the calls. Now, I will say this. In the postseason, there are fewer penalty flags thrown. Part of this is because the league doesn't want to have, 10 holding calls. You can call holding on almost every play. The Jaguars have been the beneficiary of not having holding calls thrown against them in the past. I look back at the 2007 playoffs against the Steelers. However, again, just 1 on the Patriots. The big one that really, the 2 penalties I think that really get people going. 1 was the hit by Barry Church on Rob Gronkowski. I thought it was the right call. The rule is you go helmet to helmet to a defenseless receiver, you're going to get the call. Gave Gronkowski a concussion. He left the game. It should have been a flag. It just wasn't an intentional foul. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing, there was a pass interference call on A.J. Boye that I still don't see. And that really changed things on that drive that led to the first touchdown for the Patriots. But in the end, it was Tom Brady with under 3 minutes to play, throwing a touchdown pass to give the Patriots their first lead since it was 3-0. Just too much Tom Brady, quite frankly, in the game. And after the game, as you might imagine, Doug Marrone was just absolutely devastated. He called it the worst kind of pain this side of losing a loved one.
We had an opportunity at the end of the game to win it. We weren't able to do that. And credit to New England, obviously. You know, they made the plays to win the game for themselves. And, you know, they're a great team. And, you know, I like the way our guys fought. It's a locker room. Obviously, there's a lot of pain. You know, you just hurt inside. I'm hurting. The coaches are hurting. The players, obviously, are hurting. I'm sure our fans are hurting. You know, but a lot of guys on this team have gutted it out all year. They gutted it out today.
Yeah, it's just a gutted kind of feeling in the Jaguars locker room last night. So the season, great turnaround. No team had ever had a bigger turnaround than the Jaguars, going from 3 wins 1 year to playing for a spot in the Super Bowl the next. So looking forward, a couple of things the Jaguars did accomplish this year. They've reestablished what Jaguars football is all about, and that really goes back to the hiring of Tom Coughlin and the decisions that were made in the offseason. And externally, I think they've started to sort of change the narrative around the team. The Jaguars are not going to be the butt of jokes anymore.
Exactly.
Around the National Football
League. Like the show that mocks the Jaguars.
Right, yeah. NBC's the good place. Yeah. They're going to have to find a way to work that in.
Yeah, what are they going to do now?
At some point, Ted Danson may have to re-record some lines somewhere along the line. So going forward, this is a team with a very young and a very talented base. They should be a contender going forward. Now, they will have a first-place schedule next year, which means they will play the likes of the Patriots and the Steelers in the regular season, and it will be a bigger challenge for them. But if some of those guys in the second phase of their careers, fourth, fifth, sixth-year players, continue to develop, and the young players continue to take that step forward, this is a team that should be a contender for the foreseeable future. They're going to have to make a decision on a couple of guys in the offseason, but by and large, this base is going to be back next year, and the Jaguars should be a contender for the foreseeable future. They'll have to sit and watch some of their teammates play in the Pro Bowl on Sunday, and then the following week, it'll be the Patriots against the Eagles in the Super Bowl in a rematch of the Super Bowl that was played here in Jacksonville, Super Bowl 39.
Yeah, the two most annoying fan bases in America. Yay. Sorry.
Hey, listen, we're allowed bitterness for 24 hours
right? That's right. Always great to see you. Follow Cole on Twitter, at Cole Pepper. The Sam and Cole podcast breaks down all the football news you want and other sports news and notes. Thanks, Cole.
Thanks, Melissa.
All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.